This is Songwriter's Room, and I'm your host, Tomoko. Today's guest is Gordon Chambers. Gordon Chambers has been one of the most sought-after songwriters for a long time. He is the winner of 8 ASCAP Songwriting Awards and 4 Dove nominations. He was written for numerous major recording artists, including Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston, Anita Baker, Yolanda Adams, Beyoncé, Brandy, Trey Songz, Usher, Jamie Foxx, Gladys Knight, Chaka Khan, Patti LaBelle, Marc Anthony, and young singers such as Karina Pageant and Tori Lanez. Gordon is also an accomplished singer with 4 solo albums. His latest CD, Surrender, features Grammy winner Layla Hathaway and Grammy nominee Eric Robertson. Now please enjoy his mini live performance of the song he wrote for Brownstone, If You...
I don't wanna rain on this parade, but I'm starting to question the love that was made. Not looking for just an affair, but a love that is based on the truth that is there. You will not hurt my pride in front of you. Trust me, do it. If you want me, show it. And you need me, prove it. If you love me, say it. If you trust me, do it. If you want me, show it. And you need me, prove it. Oh, I wanna touch you, baby.
Thank you.
You write many songs for women. How do you approach it?
That's a great question. Truth be told, some of the songs that I've written were not intentionally necessarily for women. I sang the demo of If You Love Me, I sang the demo of I Apologize for Anita, I sang the demo of Missing You for Brandy Tamia, Gladys Knight, and Chaka Khan. That one was by request for a sort of a women-centered film from Set It Off with Queen Latifah and Jada Pinkett. But when I'm writing, I don't necessarily ascribe to the theory that there are female emotions and there are male emotions. Mm-hmm. I think there may be female and female tendencies and male tendencies based on how we're socialized, because oftentimes men are not taught that it's okay to express their vulnerable side. Mm-hmm. So I think that when I'm writing lyrically, I just am trying to ignore the quote unquote yin and yang and just tap into my emotional center, vulnerable part of my soul, and expressing my emotions, you know, which is love, fear, hurt, heartache, overcoming, all those human emotions which don't really have a gender. You know, I love very much the lyrics of Stevie Wonder and Simon Garfunkel and Lionel Richie, Bob Marley. Those are the songwriters when I was growing up in the 70s that I heard a lot of, you know, male songwriters. Ashford and Simpson, which was a male and female combination, but Nick Ashford was the lyricist of their combination, which many people don't know. Mm-hmm. So I was listening when I was trying to emulate songwriters that I wanted to, you know, role model after. They were the sort of the sensitive males, the sensitive guys, and I think I'm a kind of a sensitive guy. I love Babyface very, very much. Love Luther Vandross, who not only wrote beautifully, but also covered a lot of female songs. He would actually do his renditions of a lot of Dionne Warwick songs written by Burt Bacharach. So I think I just was trying to tap into the sensitive side of myself. Mm-hmm. And as a songwriter, that gave me an access to helping me express myself. And songs not only talk to people, but they speak for people. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times over the years I've met, men have complimented me for that. They said, thank you for writing that song, because, you know, it's hard for people to say, I'm sorry. So when that song came out, I bought, you know, copies for my girlfriend, and one guy said it saved his marriage because he didn't know how to say he was sorry, but he said that song helped him. You know, Missing You many, many people told me that, you know, they would have that song sung or as a grieving anthem, so to speak. And If You Love Me, you know, a lot of women say, you know, that song really helped me communicate to my boyfriend, you know, how I was feeling inside, like I wanted to be claimed. I wanted you to sort of not make me know that I'm your woman and I'm important to you. So I'm just happy that the songs have done for all genders what they were intended to do.
Yeah, I think you are a sensitive man. That's why you don't have to try hard. So I heard that you didn't go solo until Whitney Houston encouraged you to do it. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to write and sing, but it wasn't something I was regularly pursuing, so to speak. And I did have a couple of major label record deal offers that didn't work out, something politically, like at the last minute, kind of like the deal didn't go through. And so I kind of was like, maybe this is not necessarily for me. I've tried it and tried, maybe it's not my thing. I kind of put that desire on the back burner. And then once I was actually producing a session for Whitney Houston's Christmas album, producing the title track, One Wish, I was telling Whitney I needed her to sing this higher note. And I was like being really strict and demonstrative because we were on a time crunch. I'd say, Whitney, no, you got to sing the note like this. She says, I think you want to do what I do, baby. And if that's what you need to do, then that's what you need to do. And she said it real quick. And she said it just like that. That's what kind of put that spark back in my spirit. Started talking to my producer friends like Troy Taylor and Barry Eastman and an engineer, Prince Charles Alexander, that I've worked with, and said, listen, guys, I think I want to give this a shot as an independent. You know, don't have a lot of money. Can't, you know, write you the kind of check that sometimes the record labels have written for us as producers. But I think I want to just give this a shot and put this out, and reached out to people that were I knew from the industry. And everyone said yes. Everyone was really like, if this is what you want to do, Gordon, go for it. Really, people were very, very supportive and made that first album, Introducing Gordon Timms, which did very well in Japan. Thank you, Japan, for always supporting me in everything that I've ever done. Songwriter, as a producer, as a coach, as an artist, as a touring artist, Japan has always been there for me and has always shown me lots and lots of love.
You're welcome.
And that's when I released the first solo album in 2005. It's the 15th anniversary of the Introducing Gordon Chambers. And then after that came Love Stories. And then after that, Sincere. And the most recent album is Surrender.
Fantastic. You have a beautiful brownstone house in Brooklyn, but you had a major, major fire 2016 on a Valentine's Day, and it burned your whole house down. You had to rebuild from scratch. How yes. did that experience change you?
Oh, wow. That was a very profound experience, very fearful experience, you know, because I was sitting here at home, chillaxing, eating a roti and drinking a glass of wine and just relaxing. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, it was a big fire, so I could have died in the fire. Had I been asleep, like, one floor down and just, you know, it could have killed me.
What was the cause?
Brownstones are connected, you know, the houses are connected. So the fire actually, something was a malfunction in the fireplace next door. So the fire sort of came through the house next door. And their house didn't burn at all. So it just was this freak accident that, you know, it just shows you how life can change in a flash. But I was very grateful to be alive. But that night, my neighbors came in full force and rallied around me. And it was really cold and it was winter. It was like 12 degrees. And I had on like basically pajamas and slippers. They literally came and put coats and shoes on my feet and made me hot chocolate because I was really in trauma and shock. And friends that heard about it came by my side. And I mean, they were real daredevils. I really appreciate them. I really, for coming that night. Phaedra, Brett, Tony, Chris, Carl. I remember I want to call their names because they came that night. And SJ, whew, it was very traumatic, but it's a time that I look back, and mostly what I remember about it is the good now, and I remember the community rallying around me. My aunt Joy let me stay in her house for about 5 weeks until I got my first insurance, like sort of check to, you know, keep me afloat too. And then I found a temporary apartment. A friend, Ebony, helped me rent this apartment that was right around the corner, and we started working on the house for like over 2 years. But, you know, it was like all my possessions, awards, artwork, clothes, gone, destroyed, either destroyed permanently, like unsalvageably, or destroyed where they needed a lot of, you know, to be sent away for cleaning or what have you. So for months, I just was wearing like 4 outfits of clothes changing, you know, and 3 or 4 days worth of clothes just changing. I mean, I was homeless, but I was loved. You know, it was really a profound time because people reached out to support me for just as a human being. not because I was Gordon Chambers, the, you know, the recording artist, or Gordon Chambers, the producer, the award-winning this. It was very human. My family, my friends, mm-hmm. and neighbors just rallied around me as a human being. And I think that for so many years, pursuing my gift and my craft and opportunities and networking and working so hard at what I do, it was a time of, it wasn't about that. It was about me as a human being, being very, very human at the time. So I got through it. And then there was an album that I had started working on over time, like slowly but surely years prior. And I actually finished recording that album shortly thereafter. So I said, you know, it's time to finish that album and put that album out. That was the Surrender album. And we shot a video in the shell of this house. It was, I'm sure it was horribly illegal. The song that my friend Steph Reed had written called I Made It, could have been dead and gone, but I made it, which I had recorded before the fire.
I thought you did it after the fire.
No, we had recorded that song before the fire.
What?
But the lyrics were so profoundly connected to what I had experienced that I called my video director and said, Charles, my house burned down. And Charles and I had videotaped a lot of things. He said, not that beautiful house. I said, yes, Gordon. Yes, Charles, this one. And so we came to the shell of the house and we shot this video. We were like so scared the cops were going to catch us. But we shot the video here. We sort of relived the experience and we wanted to tell the story really to uplift other people. The message in the video was whatever battle you're going through, have your faith. And I released Surrender 1 year exactly after the fire was when the album was. So I wanted to uplift myself and turn the pain and the fear of that experience into something that would be of empowerment to myself and to others.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. So let's get to part two of songwriting.
Sure.
Could you tell us the key to write a hit song?
You know, I always feel a little funny when somebody asks me, like, how do you write a hit song? Because I was never intending to write any hit songs.
Mm.
I'm grateful for the producers that I've worked with, Troy Taylor, Dave Hall, Barry Eastman, to name a few. Producers were more conscientious of hit factor than I was.
Mm.
For me, I've always been like, I really wanted to write something beautiful and meaningful, but melodic and something that people could sing along to. For me, I think the most important aspect of hit making, quote unquote, is the melody. Growing up, one of my favorite songs of all time, like a song that I heard constantly that my parents still love to this day, is Pata Pata by Miriam Makeba. And part of the song is done in Xhosa, which is a South African language where there's clicks in it. It just makes me so joyful, happy. I remember going to Japan to perform, and I didn't really know how much of the language that people were understanding of when I sang If You Love Me and other songs from my solo albums there. But you can feel the heart through the melody. And you want to say something in a clever way because it's all the same thing. You know, people have been falling in and out of love for thousands of centuries and have experiencing heartbreak and hope. You know, it's none of these emotions are new. But when you can turn a phrase, put a little angle on it, onto what you're saying, is what I think makes it pop and what makes it unique. And paint a picture. I believe in being as picturesque as possible in your lyrics. Sometimes you go bigger by going smaller. Who, what, why, when, and where? Like, what did it taste like? What did it look like? What did it feel like? You know, tell me the details. The details are the good parts of any story. Even somebody talks to you, it's like, ooh, what happened? Ooh, girl, when? Tell me. You know, you want the details to make it really real. So was Burt Bacharach's song for Dionne Warwick, Spread Your Wings to New Orleans, Kentucky Bluebird, and Send a Message to Michael. The singer is estranged from this love that's gotten away. And she's singing to the bluebird, to tell the bluebird to send a message to Michael, like tell him that I still love him, you know. I was like, wow, it's a song actually about breakup, but it's like that picturesque quality, send a message to Michael through the Kentucky bluebird. Who would have thought? But, you know, if you're a songwriter and you happen to be in Kentucky, the native bird, and that touches you just looking at that bird, use that bird to help tell your story about what you're talking about. There's a ribbon in the sky for our love. Just that visual by Stevie Wonder, just like imagining a ribbon in the sky. I just thought that was such an astounding way to say I love you. There's a ribbon in the sky. You know, I say to songwriters, read books. Read Toni Morrison and read James Baldwin. Read Ta-Nehisi Coates. read the great writers of our time. Look at how they write and how they paint pictures and tell stories. You know, a song is a 4-minute novel or a 3-minute novel. So you want to have character development, who, what place. It should be visual. But then it should have a hook, preferably, you know, that's something that has sing-along factor and sing-along quality, and some joy in repetition. Prince. She wore a raspberry beret. I think I love her. Brilliant. Because when you fall in love with somebody, it's the quirky things about somebody that you fall in love with. It. Yeah, there you want somebody who's good-hearted and all of that. But sometimes love is very simple. And it's just like, it could be the quirkiness of somebody who wears a raspberry beret. That's very human because that's the quirk that makes you fall in love with somebody. So those are the things you want to capture in your song.
Great. So when you work with someone like a Dave Holly, does he give you a track and you write on it, or you already have the song right and give it to him?
Yeah, Dave Holly and I worked together a lot of times where he gave me tracks. Like, mm-hmm. For If You Love Me, he gave me the track. Sometimes that he'd have unfinished tracks and I would play chords and add to the track, or sometimes he'd have tracks and I would say to him, I like that, but switch this chord, because I could get on the piano and say, okay, I like that, but how about if we switch this around? And likewise with lyrics. Like, sometimes when I'd show him lyrics that I'd write to the tracks, he'd be like, okay, I like that, but say this instead of that, or that could be the hook instead of the verse. Or it was kind of like we stayed in our lanes for the most part, but we got involved, you know, because it had to feel, the track had to feel good to what I was doing lyrically, and the lyric had to feel good. So we didn't try to specialize in what the other specialty is, but we did have dialogue about it, because when both of us, like, there's a healthy kind of, almost a healthy competition in a way. It's collaboration, it's healthy competition and teamwork, but people are sort of specializing in what they think that they feel comfortable in their lane, and the two lanes coming together.
I see. So what's new for Gordon Chambers?
You know, Gordon Chambers is trying to figure it out. You know, 2020 has been crazy, and here we are on the cusp of 2021. So for this year, it was just very simple, you know, pivoting to staying home, because I'm used to being in songwriting sessions, being, you know, doing gigs, performing, having students come over for lessons. My life has been very social, so this year I had to really pivot to just kind of like living a more simple kind of quiet life. But I have done, you know, a lot of lessons online for people, and some students have still come over. There's enough space here for social distancing, so they wear their masks. I think in 2021, I'll start working on solo album number 5 that I haven't really formulated what that will be, but I've been trying to actually keep myself safe, keep myself healthy, and keep myself strong for when the phone calls and people do need, you know, emotional support, that I have the strength to be there for them, because there's been a lot of that. But I think 2021, I will start the next solo album, and I'm going to continue. I love coaching and doing, you know, things that are educational like this. So if people want to continue to be in contact with me privately for vocal lessons, they can absolutely hit me up on Instagram, DM me at Gordon Chambers, or email me at gordon@gordonchambers.com for songwriting tutorial, personal vocal lessons. You know, being an educator is very, 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 gives me a lot of joy, giving back and really helping people see the best in who they are gives me a lot of joy.
Awesome. Well, you're a Jamaican, so Jamaican people know a lot of healthy food.
Jamaicans, yes, we do like to eat. There's a, you know, the Ital, which is really the Rastafari part of the culture, is the most healthy part of Jamaican cuisine. We do eat a lot of meat. Some Jamaicans do eat quite a bit of meat, but for the most part, it's relatively healthy, yes. But it's all fresh food. Jamaicans do like to eat cooked, fresh food. But, you know, Jamaicans, we have to watch our starch. We have to watch our rice and peas. We have to watch our yams, our dumplings. We do have to watch that.
Yeah.
And the fried foods as well. But in general, I think it's a healthier cuisine than many cuisines.
I'm Japanese, so I agree.
I love Japanese food. I love it.
You do, huh? So this is going to be the last question.
Sure.
What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Oh, that's a great question. What advice would I give to my 20-year-old? When I was 20, I was just getting out of college. I think when I was 20, I was very much trying to be a young adult. I wanted to be taken seriously, and so I kind of stepped into this very adult space. If anything, I would say, you know, have more fun. I think I'm a big kid. Like, you know, I'm 51 now, and I'm now in a lot of ways I'm like the big kid of the bunch who likes to do the fun things. Kind of like reclaiming my time of my childhood, because when I was young, I was very serious and very driven about wanting to make my mark in the world. So I would look back, I would say, you can have a little bit more fun. Everything's going to work out. Have some fun.
Right. Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on Songwriters Room today, Gordon.
We got through all the technical difficulties. I'm so glad we did it.
Yes. Until we meet each other again. Sayonara.
Yes. Thank you. And Moshi Moshi, call me if we need to take any more edits or record anything else you let me.
I will.
Arigato.